Okay, good morning. Welcome to the PolicySig. That should be the 13th of PolicySig meeting. And before the meeting starts, I would like to mention the housekeeping notes. The first one, please use the microphone. People asking questions, please use the microphone. There's a left arm this way and there's right hand side. And the session is broadcasted, so please use microphone. The morning tea, lunch, and afternoon tea area will be in level 2 foyer. For Africa, closing event will be 7 p.m. to 9 in the ballroom. My Epinic and Policy Flash demo all day at Epinic Help Desk. Help Desk is available at break times. Also, we have on-site notice board. Please the on-site notice board on the screen to participants and point out the check regularly for last minute change and new update. So that should be shown on the website. Sorry, I need to later show on the website. And also, just pre-notice, Epinic 21st informal closing dinner, that will be tomorrow. People who complete ticket payment, please come to collect your ticket from the help desk today from 12:30 and tomorrow, and also see more detail from Epinic website. Okay, thank you very much. I want to show that. Yeah. Okay, let's today updated agenda. The agenda order will be starting from review of open action item and presented by Kenny Huang, myself, and also IIP report presented by Leslie from Chair of IIP, and also IIP policy update, comparative status in OIR region presented by Seva from Epinic. And also we have one policy proposal for by AS number presented by Jeff Houston from Epinic. And we also have IPv6 portable assignment for multi-home. That will be presented by Tashi-san, right? Okay. And we have large IPv4 address space usage trial for future IPv6 presented by Ito-san from IPv6 Promotion Council, Japan. And also, we have survey result in JP on IPv6 policy change presented by Izumi from Japanic. And the last one will be issue with critical infrastructure assignment sites presented by Billy Jong from KR. Okay, that's the order of today's agenda. I want to go to the first agenda item. Okay, that's the first agenda item. First of all, welcome to the PolicySig again. For PolicySig, the charter of the PolicySig is to develop policies and procedures which relate to the management and use of internet address resources by Epinic, NIR, and ISP within the Asia-Pacific regions. And the chair is Kenny Huang, it's myself, and also we have co-chair Tashi-san and Eugene Lee, just sit on my left-hand side. For policy document, you can download a policy document. For current policies, download from epinic/dot. And for draft policy, download from epinic/dot/draft. For policy proposal, review on epinic/dot/policy/proposals. So just try to remind again, that's the policy development timeline. And starting from, we have four phases of policy development, starting from needs and discussion, consensus, and implement. And for needs, the member or APNIC member can propose the proposal, and after the comment period, before 4 weeks before the meeting discussion. And so right now we are in the stage of meeting discussion. And after meeting discussion, we try to seek consensus from the PolicySig. If the consensus reached, then the proposal will be reported to the annual member meetings. Then, if the proposal reaches the consensus again in the annual member meeting, that will be submitted to the mailing list for comment period. And once the comment period reached consensus again, that EC will report to EC and EC will endorse the proposal. Finally, the proposal will be implemented in 3 months. Oh, that's the total time frame. Regarding to facilitating the process, policy development facilitation, APNIC secretariat is first contact, and also SIC chair check suitability and discuss discussion in appropriate mailing list, discussion in upcoming SIC and annual member meeting. If you want to have a policy change, you can discuss with peer and submit a proposal using a phone, and don't need to be a member to participate. Secretariat happy to assist if needed. You can download a policy change form from the following website. Okay, your involvement. Awareness of the current policy discussion, you can check on the website, mailinglist.sicpolicy. Subscribe to the post comment to the list. And you can also attend APNIC meeting, access via remote participation, and read minutes and meeting report. Also, you can also always seek for secretarial assistance. Just repeat some housekeeping. For speaker, please speak slowly and clearly, because most of Asian country people, their native language is not English, so please speak slowly. And session is being webcast. Remote participation is possible through the GPA chat, and open as open participation. Again, please use the mic to speak. And before you speak, please give your name and give your comment or questions. The discussion by consensus, here try to mention again, not a voting. So you can review the APNIC policy website, and the consensus means no substantial objection. So it's not voting, it's consensus seeking. So approach, common agreement, and compromise. So last one is open action item. We have three open action items in the APNIC 20 meeting. The first one is policy proposal 20001. The action item was pending approval at each remaining stage of the policy development process. Secretariat to continue coordinating global acceptance of these policies. Okay, so the secretariat continue this job. And Seth, you want to comment on the first action item?
Sorry for that, from APNIC secretariat, the first action item is done.
Okay,
and
right.
Continuing global coordination.
Okay, right. Thank you. For the second action item, proposal 20002, pending approval at each remaining stage of the policy development process, secretariat to continue coordinating global acceptance of the HT ratio component of these policies. And also, please.
This is also done.
Okay, right. Thank you. For the last action item, proposal 20003, APNIC secretariat to refer further discussion of the LOIR survey to the mailing list. And
yep, this is also done, and I'll be reporting on this further in my next presentation.
Okay, right. Thank you for your response. So here we go to the first presentation, and presented by Leslie from Chair of IAB. Okay.
Good morning, and thank you. So what I'd like to do this morning is to give a bit of an overview of the IAB and IETF themselves, so you have some context for what's going on here. And I'll also give a bit of an update of current work going on there that you might find of interest, particularly relevant to to this meeting and or the rest of your technical activities. So first of all, there is the IETF, which is a formal organization in and of itself for defining technical standards. But often when one refers to the IETF, one is actually talking about a group of organizations that actually work together to take care of all the work that goes into creating and publishing and maintaining those standards. So I like to think of this as being a universe in motion, in constant motion, And at any given point, there is input being brought by technical individuals participating with their own expertise and not as representatives of organizations. They contribute to working groups and other activities within the IETF. So in terms of internal organizations, there is the IETF, which is directed by the Internet Engineering Steering Group, which organizes the working groups, and you can see that in the upper part of the picture there. That's the bulk of the work of engineering specification. And then there is the IAB, which does which has some responsibility for big picture architecture, and that is the group of which I'm currently chair. So there is a close coordination between these two groups, obviously. One other component on the picture that I want to point out about the IAB, we also formally organized the Internet Research Task Force, which is another component of the overall picture of taking care of everything from research to engineering with some kind of an architectural overview. The output of the IETF is recorded in Request for Comment formal publications, RFCs, and those are managed by the RFC editor, and the technical protocol parameters associated with IETF specifications are recorded at the IANA. So just a really quick note about the IETF itself. Again, I said that it is composed of engineers from all over the world. Most of the work is done by email. And formally, all participation is actually done by email, so you're certainly welcome, if you're not already participating, to engage in a particular working group or technical discussion, and you will be a full and honest member of the IETF, participant in the IETF. Apart from that, the IETF does meet 3 times a year, and typically we meet, you know, variously across the world, sometimes in Asia, sometimes in Europe, and sometimes in North America. All the documents are published and publicly available, and I've given 2 links for places for you to find more information. These slides are in the proceedings from this, so you can certainly pull them down at your leisure. So just to give you a sense of the span of work that the IETF does, there are currently 7 areas loosely organized around the different levels of the protocol stack, from applications to internet and routing. There are other sort of cross areas like security, and then the IETF general area for various policy-related, IETF policy-related working groups and efforts. In March 2006, there's going to be, well, in about 3 weeks, there will officially be a new area in the IETF for real-time applications and infrastructure. This is taking over a lot of the voice over IP and media related work that was split between the applications area and the transport area, and bringing it all into a new area to manage its focus. So just a little bit more about the IAB itself. Again, some hopefully useful pointers. All of our meetings are minuted, and you can see the minutes of past meetings at that rather long URL. And we keep track of all the documents that we publish ourselves, as well as the documents that we're working on. And we always welcome comments on our internet drafts. I wanted to draw your attention to the technical focus that the IAB has had for the last year, a year running from March to March, because that's more or less the cycle of appointees to the IAB and ISG and whatnot. So this year, our 3 areas of focus have been IPv6, internet architecture, surprisingly enough, and unwanted traffic. The internet architecture focus really is just a question of trying to find ways and means of bringing useful discussion around internet around architecture as a whole. It's very easy in the IETF or in the world at large to focus on piece problems that need to be solved, and at times that can, you know, local optimization may be at odds with global optimization. That's true in architecture as much as anything else. So, for instance, one of the things that we've done is established a general architecture discussion list, which is I think it's architecture-discuss@IETF.org, and you're welcome to subscribe to that and see some of the ongoing raging debates there. IPv6 may not be an obvious current topic in some regards, but since the IETF party line is that IPv6 is the way to go, but I think one of the important things to recognize that is that there are still open questions and issues beyond. There's still engineering and technical issues to resolve in order to have a smooth and ongoing deployment. I'm sure that's not news to you. So the kinds of things that the IEB is doing in these areas. We have a couple of ad hoc committees. An ad hoc IEB ad hoc committee is a group that's formed by invitation of the IEB. We bring together various experts in a given topic. It's used in some sense to inform the discussions of the IEB. The committees themselves have no authority and no decision-making, but they are a convenient organization of people to discuss particular topics. So, for instance, the IPv6 ad hoc that I've mentioned here includes various people that you would be familiar with, including Jeff Houston, who is put out as part of the discussions out of this ad hoc group, has put out a couple of internet drafts that are going to RFC that are of interest to this area. One is a document about IPv6 special addresses. Essentially, what are the? How do you go about getting address allocation for specific experiments, et cetera, within the IETF? So that's attempting essentially to wrap some kind of a definition around what was a fairly gray area in IANA allocations of IPv6 space, and trying to say, look, you know, these are the cases where legitimately it is for a technical experiment and is not at odds with, you know, the right and proper business of RIR functioning. There was also a document considering the HD ratio itself. The HD ratio came out of some technical discussions within the IETF and is documented there. The technical work of analyzing it, et cetera, still goes on within the IETF, and that can only inform the policy discussions that take place within the RIRs. So that's sort of an example of how the IETF and RIRs can and should play well together, because there is sort of some joint responsibility here. So the IETF, for instance, does not in any way set policy, but we hope to be able to pursue the technical activities that will help inform some of the policy choices. Actually, I need to go back. Yeah. So I wanted also to mention that there is, on the IPv6 front, there is a multi-homing BOF, which is happening right now, two doors down. And I apologize in advance. I'll be disappearing there just as soon as I finish giving you this update. It was originally scheduled at a different time, but it got moved to this morning, so my apologies for the confusion there. Okay, so generally speaking, in terms of IETF interest, as I mentioned, IPv6, the main work is finished, but there are lots of different pieces that are still need to be ironed out in order to make this successful and useful in the large. Also looking at mobility and a lot of work on signaling and quality of service and traffic engineering going on. I've listed some of the work that's going on there. All of these pieces come together and play in sort of building the future successful internet and evolving the network to a future generation of network. Always interesting work going on in the security area. There is never enough security. We never feel secure. These are a few of the actual efforts that are current in the IETF if you want to track them down and get involved or see what is going on specifically in the working groups. The better than nothing security is one that I'm particularly fond of because it's in essence an attempt to look at, well, look, what, given that full-on security infrastructures are often difficult to ensure mathematically, deploy pragmatically, etc., what can we do that is going to, that will be better than having no security at all? So it's kind of a pragmatic look at where can we go with security. Continuing work on AAA, and sure, I think that's enough about that. Right, so there is lots and lots of work going on in the IETF, and it is rarely dull, so here's some more of the of the fun that we're getting ourselves into. As I mentioned earlier, the RAI area, the real-time applications and infrastructure area, is spinning up. And here's an example of some of the work that has been ongoing in the IETF but will now be organized under the RAI area. So all the AV stuff, instant messaging, voice over IP, as well as some of the geolocation and emergency preparedness work, which is necessary to the to communications. And that's it, unless there are any questions.
Okay, Paul?
Hi, Paul Wilson from APNIC. Thanks very much for the presentation, Leslie, and for being here. Does the IETF have a view or a position on NGNs that you could share with us?
Thanks. And how much longer do we have?
Much time as you like.
You probably caught my oblique reference to that, to essentially an evolving network. So I believe the IETF being a collection of individuals, it is almost impossible to get an official view, stance, et cetera, except as what is published in RFCs. But I think that it's worth pointing out that there was a joint IETF-ITU workshop almost a year ago in May in Geneva, where we sort of explored our view of the evolving network and the ITU's view of the evolving network. And our stance was fairly consistently that these are the base protocols and technologies upon which any future network is going to be based. And the important thing is to evolve network technologies as opposed to leaping to a next generation. So some of the particular technologies that are important are exactly, you know, quality of service and signaling. What are the tools that that network providers can use to build the services that they wish to offer going forward? Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Thank you, Leslie. Okay, the next presenter is Seth. The topic is IP policy update, comparative status in OIR regions.
Good morning. My name is Savi Vodia. I'm the Policy Development Manager at APNIC. This presentation is a usual presentation that we give at APNIC policy meetings as an update to share with the community what has been happening in APNIC in terms of policy development, and also look at all the other regional internet registry status. If you were in the subscribe to the mailing list, you'd have heard known that in November 2005, the APNIC EC endorsed the following proposals, the following policies. These policies are globally coordinated with the other RIRs, the IANA policy for allocation of IPv6 blocks to the RIRs, and also Proposal 31, Version 2, which deals with the increase of the HD ratio of V6 from 0.8 to 0.94. The deprecation of the IP6.int reverse DNS service is also being coordinated with other RIRs to have a cessation date in June 2006. This is just a snapshot of where the current policy proposals are, and Kenny also mentioned the URL. One thing that I'd like to point out is what was discussed in the previous policy meeting is the application of HD ratio to IPv4. It's to apply the HD ratio to V4 because there were concerns from the community, or from those. It was felt that some of the ISPs in the region had difficulties satisfying the 80% rule. It was I will bring up these slides later for discussion after my presentation, so I won't talk much into it, but in the other RIRs, the RIPE region is there in the last call, but the discussions were abandoned in LACNIC and ERIN. As you will know that in today's open policy meeting, there has been only one policy proposal, and that's by Jeff Houston. He will talk to it after my presentation, so I will not talk much to it as well because I'll leave it to Jeff. But when it was discussed in the APNIC mailing list, there had been no comments from the APNIC community, so that's just what I'd like to share here. In the other RIRs, it's also undergoing the discussion phase, and it'll be presented in their respective open policy meetings. And I'd like to share now the status in other RIRs in terms of all the IP resources in IPv4, V6, ASN numbers. As I'd already mentioned earlier about the application of HD ratio to V4 allocations, I will discuss it again later after this, at the end of my presentation. But at the RIPE region, it's in its concluding phase, and I think next week is, I think it's the 7th, it's the final date. In the LACNIC region, there is a discussion that's undergoing the additional allocation to regional ISPs at 50% utilization. They felt that some regional ISPs, it's hard for them to reach 80%, and then they have to allocate again to their members. So they're thinking of having a policy at to provide subsequent allocation at 50%. There is an address space for any cast services proposal that's under discussion at the RIPE and ERIN region. And again, also in the ERIN region, they have adopted the address space for multiple discrete networks. But this was abandoned in APNIC in the last APNIC meeting. ERIN has adopted a global addresses for private network interconnectivity. And in the EFRINIC region, they are adding new policies to their current policies, which is the end user assignment and also the temporary address assignments for experimental purposes. And these are awaiting the board approval. When we look at the IPv6 status in other regions, as mentioned in the HD ratio 2.94, it had been endorsed in the APNIC region. It's also adopted in the ERIN community. And in the RIPE community, it's under discussion. There was no consensus by APNIC at the last APNIC meeting to adopt the change in the end user address space from 0.48 to 0.56. But it's under discussion in the ERIN and RIPE region. I also mentioned earlier that the IPv6 blocks to IANA to RRS is all under discussion in the region and had been endorsed by APNIC, ERIN, and LACNIC. RIPE is discussing the address space for anycast services, and this topic here, the PI assignments for N-site, which is like portable assignments for our region, is being discussed by Aaron. It's one of the hot topics in their PPML list. And as a matter of fact, like Leslie just mentioned, they're having discussions in the IAB panel next door. When we look at the ASNs, the 4-byte AS number is being discussed now in all regions. And EFRINIC had made some changes to their ASN assignment criteria, and it's under discussion. For the DNS, also the deprecation of IP6 13th reverse DNS servers has been endorsed by APNIC-EC, and as it's been globally coordinated, the cessation date for that is 6 June 2006. There is a DNSSEC reverse tree that has been implemented in the RIPE region, and that's where all the policy proposals references are kept. Thank you.
Sabi. The date is not 6th of June, first. But 1st of June, yes.
Sorry for the
clarification.
Okay, any question or comment? Okay, so thank you. Thank you, Say.
Right. As I mentioned earlier in my presentation, I wanted to put this up so that I'll seek facilitation from the SIG chairs and, you know, like whatever actions can be taken from this this open policy meeting on the proposal on application of HD ratio to V4. It was first discussed in APNIC 18. No clear decision was made, but APNIC secretariat was requested to conduct a survey with all the LIRs and also got assistance from the NIRs. Survey was shared in APNIC 20, and what we shared was that there was no proof of correlation between the problems, the network size and the complexity, or the number of servers and the levels of hierarchy. Also, when it was put back to the mailing list after the last meeting, there was really no further support expressed. And as I said, the last call is—it's in its last call at the Ripe region, but it had been abandoned in the Lechnik and Erin region. So, if you could just maybe seek the chair's facilitation in this for today.
Okay, thank you.
Germán Valdés from Lechnik. Just for a few comments about the policy of HD ratio for IPv4. We've been following the discussions in other regions, and Sabe described before. And from Lechnik perspective, from some members of the region, we are following this with some concerns because the understanding and the comments made in Lechnik list reflects that this proposal, if it's approved in one region, can have impact, important impacts in the rate of consumption of IPv4s in general. So the impact on the decision of one region can reflect in other part of the world. Even though we are worried about these discussions, we don't want to influence in the decision process in other regional internet registry, but we only ask for the discussions take in account all the variables involved in this proposal. That's my comment. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. And Jeff.
I was asked a couple of weeks ago by the RIPE NCC to do an investigation of the impacts of this policy in the RIPE region in terms of its impact on total address consumption of the remaining /8s in the unallocated pool. So what I did was actually look at the last 5 years of allocations from all of the RIRs and look at their distribution in size. So you get this sort of lots of /20s, few /19s, you know, and so on. And then I worked back and said, well, these allocations have been performed on the basis of an 80% utilization. So you can actually do a spread of populations. You randomly pick a population that would have qualified for a /20 and so on. I simulated a RIR doing 10,000 allocations, each RIR doing 10,000 allocations using that principle, and ran that experiment a further 1,000 times. So I felt I had a relatively good range of, you know, this is what the last 5 years looked like in demand. And then I said, well, instead of using an 80% fixed utilization, what would have been the result had this policy have been implemented? So for the RIPE region, what actually happens is that at a 0.96 HD ratio, the impacts are actually felt on the large allocations, and they're relatively significant. The address consumption rate of the RIPE NCC, had it been using that allocation strategy for the last 5 years, is a total increase in address consumption for for the same range of populations that they were servicing by 47%. So in other words, rather than allocating 3/8s or getting through, you would have got through approximately 4.5 for exactly the same population. If this proposal were adopted in the APNIC region, it's 49%. Now, the LACNIC issue is in some ways significant and should be borne in mind that if RIPE adopted this all by itself and none of the other RIRs did, then this does have an impact on consumption rates. And it does, if you will, bring in this expected date where we're going to run out by approximately 1 year. If all of the RIRs adopted this policy today, it would bring in that date by 2 years, because in particular, RIPE and APNIC would have effectively 50% more addresses being released for the same populations. So when you, as a community, look at this particular policy proposal, I think this is a useful statistic to bear in mind, that its impact is not just, if you will, adjusting the address allocations to suit what we think the industry structure is, but also we should be mindful of precisely what we're doing in terms of consumption rates. And the basic message is that for those RIRs, and there are three, actually Aaron is included, that have a sizable percentage of, you know, significant percentage of high allocations, the total allocation consumption increases significantly. I believe I posted this to the APNIC policy mailing list. Copies have also been posted to the RIPE and the Aaron mailing list. And yes, I have discussed this with the LACNIC folk. It's hard to actually mirror the LACNIC implications here, but certainly inside this framework, LACNIC might, if you will, not be able to get 1 or 2/8s near the end of the period of exhaustion. So yes, there are cross-RIR impacts here that we need to be mindful of. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Paul?
Yeah, I've got a question for Jeff, actually. When this policy was first formulated, I think we had 15 to 18 years of IPv4 address supply available, according to the projections, not predictions, but projections that are done on the Potoroo website. What is it today?
January the 6th, 2012.
Wow, okay.
Time.
Instead of 15 to 18 years, there's been a kind of exponential growth.
What has happened in the last
years?
What has happened in the last couple of years, Paul, is actually the unadvertised pool of addresses, stuff that's been allocated that I can't see in the routing table. Over the last few years, that amount of black space has been increasing rather than decreasing. And that's had a dramatic effect on the total consumption rates, because if we're not actually managing to recycle addresses and we're feeding this black space, then the anticipated date of IANA exhaustion comes screaming in. And yes, we do have a relatively short period using current industry behaviour of the remaining lifetime of those 61/8s.
Okay, Randy Bush.
Randy Bush, IIJ. This discussion drifted over, it was either the Aaron PPML list or NANOG or something, and there was discussion that, so what's happened is you're fitting a log to a linear, so of course it's going to be bad at the high end, so let's change it so it works at the high end, and then of course what happens is at the low end, it doesn't work. Essentially, what you're trying to do is fit a log to a linear. It does not work. Okay? In either case, it is the small people, the people with small requests, who get short stick. So it's either the large requests get more than they need, which disenfranchises the small people as we run out of resources, or you tilt it the other way to make the large come out the same and the small people get less than they need. Does not work. You're trying to fit a log to a linear.
Okay, thank you, Randy. Any question or comment? Okay, regarding to this open action, actually it's pending for quite a while, and we probably need to decide how to move to the next step. And either we have some consensus from the meeting, or either we submit a proposal, or we remain submit into the mailing list for wait another month, and then we make a decision after all. Okay, if there's no resolution or consensus, I suggest we move the issue to the discuss in the mailing list for another 1 month, and after 1 month, the sixth chair will decide on what to do the next step, either pending the proposal, continue the proposal, or abandon the proposal. Okay, right, thank you. Sorry, any objection? Okay, right, thank you. Before moving to the next section item, I would like to change my chair to our co-chair, Eugene Lee, and he will chair the next session. Thank you very much.
Hi, everyone. This is Eugene Lee, the co-chair of this policy. I will chair the following two presentations. Let's start with today's only policy proposal presented by Jeff Huston from APNIC. Please.
This is a really quick proposal, and it assumes that you are familiar with or have read a report I did at the previous APNIC meeting on the consumption of AS numbers. So this proposal is actually about what to do when, and it turned out in looking at the expected exhaustion of the 16-bit AS number pool. So at some point, sometime between now and around 2011, we need to actually transition the new part of the internet into use 32-bit AS numbers and possibly assist in transitioning the existing part to use the same 32-bit numbers. Although the second part of this, upgrading the existing infrastructure, is actually not required as part of this transition. So this policy proposal is actually aimed at assisting the industry, vendors and deployers in transitioning to use 32-bit numbers. What we're trying to do is to plan ahead rather than panic at the time, because we know on consumption rates that the AS number pool of 65,535 numbers will exhaust. It will exhaust sometime around 2011 or so. There doesn't seem to be a panic rush going on there. This is not like IPv4 addresses. But certainly right now, on the routers you run from a number of major vendors, there is no code in your routers to support the use of a 32-bit AS number if you happen to get one for your network. Now, if you don't get one, you don't need to change your routing system. But if you do get one, you need new code. So at some point we need to send some signals out there to the industry about what kind of dates are required for us to do this transition painlessly. So the essential attributes of this policy to actually do ease of this transition, to try and inform all of you and the industry at large what actions will happen on what dates, so you can plan for that and give very clear dates in terms of registry actions themselves. So the underlying thing here, and I've got it in the wrong font colour, but if you have a look at draft IETF, IDR, AS 4 bytes, you will actually see that there is an IETF document that describes the use of 32-bit AS numbers and describes the transitional arrangements to actually bootstrap ourselves into that domain. And as I said, I have done some predictions on the effective exhaustion of the 16-bit space. Henk Utava had presented yesterday some work by Wright looking at a similar scenario, slightly different bent looking at reclamation and so on, but I think between the two of us, both of us agree that there is a problem coming up. And considering that this is now not a very small operation, the internet is a very big one and there are 21,000 ASs out there at the moment, a few of you need to consider what you're doing and understand that in the size of your organisation's network, you might take some years to actually get the necessary testing and deployment phases done before you're ready. So we'd like to do this in an ordered fashion that doesn't produce surprises. So the assumption here is that the IANA actions in setting up a 32-bit AS number registry, which we believe is relatively simple, should be documented and completed by the 1st of January next year. In essence, all this does is take the existing AS number registry and add in another 4.3 billion numbers to it as a single line entry. It doesn't change any of the other structure of the registry. The proposal itself is hopefully relatively simple. It actually just nominates three dates. The first date is the date the proposal becomes effective, and commencing 1 January next year, if you want to experiment or otherwise use a 32-bit AS number, you will be able to ask explicitly for one of those numbers from the number pool. If you don't say anything, you'll get an existing 16-bit number as you'd always have gotten. So as of 1 January 2007, the proposal is that if you want to use a 4-byte number, you can say so, and the registry will give you one according to its normal allocation practices. There's no change in the allocation policy, it's just the number we're dealing with. The next date is actually very closer to the predicted run-out date for the 2-byte numbers. So one would have hoped, and certainly this policy anticipates, that folk building new networks or wanting to use new AS numbers because of expansion or whatever would have been able to source and deploy new versions of BGP in their routers to cope with 4-byte AS numbers. So the proposal is that by 1 January 2009, we flip and that 32-bit numbers will be allocated by default. In other words, the two high bytes, the two top 16 bits, will be non-zero. There should be, according to the prediction, sufficient AS numbers left in the 16-bit pool such that if you want a 16-bit number because you haven't got access to new versions of BGP by then, you should be able to ask for them explicitly. So the policy changes on 1 January 2009 that if you meet the AS allocation criteria by default after that date, you would get a 4-byte number unless you explicitly ask for a 2-byte number. The policy disappears on the 1st of January 2010. As of that date, it's just one 32-bit number pool. And you will get either a 4-byte or an equivalent 2-byte number, but basically you should consider all the numbers by 1 January 2010 as 4-byte numbers. Down there is sort of, you know, what do I mean by 4-byte and 2-byte? Well, the 2-byte ones are in the range from 0 to 65535. The 32-bit only numbers are the next lot, from 65536 through to 4.2 billion. And on 1 January 2010, we just simply say it's a very big number pool and it extends through from 0 to 4.3 billion. What it doesn't do, no more new private AS number pools. The existing set from 64,511 through to 65,535 is the AS number private use pool. It doesn't define any documentation use AS numbers. It doesn't continue any legacy pool after 1 January 2010. It's just 4-byte numbers at that point. This policy would effectively vaporise on the 1st of January 2010, and we're dealing with a 4-byte AS number pool as RIR registry actions. APNIC can adopt this policy unilaterally, as can any other RIR, so it doesn't require any coordinated actions, nor does it define any different AS number allocation practices. So this is merely a case of offering some dates and some default RIR registry practices commencing at each of those three dates. And that's the proposal. Yes, end of slide. Any questions, comments?
Is it me from JPNIC? Are we actually, share this proposal within our community, and we didn't have a big, you know, comment or problems. But there was one question, and I personally think that it would probably lose the spirit of the proposal. But there was a question how flexible this date could be, and if it's a really rigid date and it's got to be, you know, set on this date no matter what, or if some unexpected problems happen, it could be removed, you know, it could be reviewed and changed again. There was a question from one of our community members.
Certainly, the issue here was indeed to specify dates for, I suppose, quite a particular reason. When this was first aired as we have a problem, we should do something about this, over a year ago, one of the major router vendors had responded along the lines of, well, you know, we put features in routers when customers ask for them, and basically we only listen to customers who spend money, so that when customers scream that this is an important consideration for purchasing our gear, it will be in there. And we haven't heard anyone, so we're not doing anything. Which struck me as a relatively backward view of this problem. Since then, I believe that particular router vendor has, I hear second-hand, put this particular feature in BGP on their implementation track. But, of course, then comes the issue of when should it be done? And we know pretty much that if a current allocation rate stay the way they are, we had better be completely finished with this transition by around 2011. And knowing some very big networks take some certain months, if not years, to do the testing and deployment of this kind of stuff, then this is trying to offer some dates to the industry at large to say, look, by 2010, we'd better have solved this. That's why the first date, 2007, says, if you're ready and want to use it, you can. But 2009, some 3 years hence from today, it's a case of saying, we really should have got most of the software fielded. If you feel that you haven't got software ready in your BGP, you can ask for a two-byte number and you will get it. So it's not that you won't have access to those numbers, it's just by default we expect most of that BGP to be out there by that date. So I think I would respond in saying, yes, there are good reasons for having those dates, but if, as an ISP, you can't make it, certainly by 2009 to 2010, there's a way out. You can use a two-byte number if you want one and have a case. And it's not a case that you have to demonstrate anything particular. This policy proposal says you just simply have to say, I'd like a two-byte number, please.
Okay, thank you very much. And I think there are, we support this proposal, and I think it would help in the transition of ACE number. Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other questions or comments? No? Okay.
Thank you.
Since this is a policy proposal, we need to look for consensus here. Anyone who is in favor of this proposal, please raise your hands. Thanks. That's 14 hands. Who is not in favor of this proposal, please also raise your hands. Okay, this is a consensus, I guess. Thanks, Jeff.
Thank you.
The next speaker is Toshi-san, and his presentation is IPv6 portable assignment for multi-homing.
Thank you, Eugene. Good morning, everyone. My name is Toshi from JPNIC. This presentation is from a Japanese special interest group on IPv6 multi-homing PI address space. This presentation, originally, Mr. Toyama from NTT Japan planned to make this presentation, but in some reason he cannot make it. So I will go through his slides on his behalf. And Toyama-san is waiting in the Java chat room, and hopefully he can answer your questions if you have. So this is the outline of this presentation. This presentation introduced our discussion so far in JP communities regarding IPv6 portable assignment for multi-homing. I use a provider independent, that is PI, IPv6 space later, for short. And first, I will go through our principles, and second, I will present PI requirement analysis, and third, I'd like to go through issues on the IPv6 global routing table. And finally, I will present a draft policy document for assignment of IPv6 portable address space for multi-homing. So, our principle. We recognize these principles and goals are important when we consider the condition of the IPv6 multi-homing assignment. We recognize we should consistent with the goals of IPv6 address management, which is described in the current IPv6 policy document, that those are uniqueness and registration, aggregation, conservation, fairness, and minimized overhead. But on the other hand, we should be flexible to our operational reality. We should be ready to accommodate business operational needs from communities, and we should accommodate the control of the routing table. We should control the routing table. And we should ensure it will not be out of control. And the criteria of IPv6 multi-homing PI should be fair among the community. So the requirement for the multi-homing PI for IPv6 address. Currently, there are various discussions taking place on this issue, IPv6 multi-homing PI, mainly in the PPML mailing list in A-ring region. And various opinion and comments are made in this mailing list, particularly who should receive the assignment varies by person. So we should sort it out those kind of requirement. So when we think of the PI requirement, there are some categorization. At first, there is a requirement for multi-homing for organizations which needs redundant connectivity. And there is also a requirement for the permanent address space, in other words, the address space which don't need renumber for organizations which require unique address to be independent of upstream providers. And also, we can categorize the requirement like this. There are two types of organizations which need a routable portable address space but unable to receive a portable allocation under the current IPv6 policy. For example, smaller LIRs which cannot demonstrate to assign 200 customers in 2 years. Like such as transit-only provider or data centers or very small local providers. And also the end site cannot receive portable allocation or assignment because current IPv6 policy prohibit to give the portable assignment or allocation to end site. And we have the issue of size. Organizations which require portable assignment can also be categorized by size or scale of its network. There are various network, so the which has a large network or small network, and the number of devices in the network varies. The network by network. So our target is here, end site, because we don't care for the permanent address space requirement because it should not be considered at the currently because someone can say this is just a selfish requirement or something. And this area, LIR, a smaller LIR requirement, we should separate this needs from portable assignment requirement because this needs should be addressed by current IPv6 policy, in particular 200 customer requirement. So we don't care this area this time. So to summarize, we focus the target for only multi-homing because end-site organizations have strong needs for redundancy for their internet connectivity. And secondly, technical requirement for multi-homing is very clear and easy to define the criteria. And also, we focus on end-site only, and not LIR, because the policy for small LIRs should be covered by modifying the current IPv6 policy, PA policy. This is a kind of mistake, not RA, but a PA, a provider aggregatable address policy. And currently, no policy statement for end sites, so end sites cannot receive a portable assignment. So we focus on end site. And we do not differentiate the criteria by size of the organizations because organization size does not justify their needs of PA address space. Sometimes small organizations require redundancy of internet access, so we do not differentiate by size. So our target is multi-homed or plans to be multi-homed network. And our target is also in sight and no differentiation by size of the organization. So we should consider the assignment policy for this target. When we talk about this issue, we cannot avoid the issue on the IPv6 global routing table. So I will mention about this issue. In principle, we think that the growth of IPv6 global routing table is unavoidable because regardless whether we implement PI policy or not, the global routing table growth is inevitable because the end sites will use a punching hole. So we think it is more constructive to allow PI address from particular block. That is better than the create punching holes in PA block. And we estimate some future trend of IPv6 global routing table, which described like in this slide. There will always be some requirement for a redundant connectivity in the future from the business perspective. Currently, we have a lot of multi-home network in the enterprises and or small ISPs or some other organizations. If we do not have PI address, such organization will multi-home by making punching holes, which is not legitimate in the current IPv6 policy document. And leaving the situation as it is would allow punching holes just like the current IPv4 internet, and will inevitably lead to messy situation. There are maybe lots of /48 or /56 in the global routing table. So, allowing portable assignments for multi-home network from a particular specified address block at an early stage can prevent chaos in portable allocation range. And this is better in terms of the address space management. And according to some router vendor, routers possibly handle prefixes in the separated PI space better than punching holes in P provider aggregatable address space. Basically, punching holes are harmful. For example, it can be used to intentionally reroute traffic to cheaper links. And if better multi-homing method comes up in the future, we can enforce them to move to the new space or new multi-homing method until some specified day. So I will go through our draft policy for the IPv6 PI address space. So the target is end site regardless of size. And the assignment criteria is like this. The end site feature assigned IPv6 PI address space must be multi-homed using the assigned PI address space in 3 months. Secondly, if the PA address space is not used for multi-homing after the 3 months, the address space can be reclaimed. This is just like current IPv4 PI rule. And the end site features the end site which receives IPv6 PA address space must pay the fee for this space. And regarding PI address space, portable assignment should be made from a specified block. This should be separated from current PA address space. For example, 3001 :/8 or something. And that PI assignment size to an end site should be the same size as in provider aggregatable address. Currently, this is the /48. So this is the summary of this presentation. Regarding IPv6 portable assignment for multi-homing, we analyzed the requirement for IPv6 PI address space and defined the target. This is the currently multi-homed or plans to be multi-homed in site, regardless of its size, its network size. And we considered the future trend of the IPv6 global routing table, and we should control the PI's address space by separating it from PA address space to avoid the punching holes. And currently, we are discussing assignment policy for PI address space. This is the current idea. An end site features currently plans to be multi-homed. An end site must be multi-homed by a specified period, for example, 3 months. And PI assignments will be made should be made from a sprite block from PA. So that's all for from me. Thank you.
Thank you, Tursang. Any comments and questions?
We are gathering the routing table data or discussing the condition of the PI assignment, and we'll be coming back with the formal proposal in the next APNIC meeting. If we can have some feedback from you, that would be much appreciated.
Okay. Thank you, Tosh. Toshi will chair the following sessions. I'll hand over this to Toshi.
Okay. The first session of this policy SIG ends at 10:30. So we only have 9 minutes left. So we can enter the tea break from now for 40 minutes. So please come back this room at 11 a.m. Thank you.